This is the Meet Me at the Spot podcast, where we meet at the intersections of sexual health and the world around us. Each week, we will discuss sexual health current events, politics, social justice issues, and more. Get excited because it is time to start the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Meet Me at the Spot. I'm your host, Holly, and this week's episode, we are going to continue our conversation with Rev Carla. Now, if you missed part one from last week, I highly recommend that you pause right here, go back and listen to part one, and then come back because we're going to be picking up today's episode where we left off from last week. So it'll be a little confusing. It'll sound like it's in the middle of a thought process, and it's intentional. It's because it is. This week, we are continuing our conversation on deconstructing, on spirituality versus organized religion, and really talking about, is the world doomed? Is the world all bad? Where can we find the good in the world? So let's jump right back into conversation with Rev Carla.
Now, and you're talking to someone who was born and raised on a dairy farm in Kentucky. I was a proud Southern Baptist for the majority of my life. I had never understood the problems related to human rights until I was well into my late 20s. I did not understand. I was so naive and disconnected to the rights of the LGBTQIA+, or how deeply entrenched racism was in our country, or how it was connected to religion. I didn't understand any of that. So you're not talking to someone who has always been working and advocating for the rights of the historically oppressed. You're talking about someone who recognized through my privilege that I was that I was being harmed. I was being harmed by this ideology. And then one day I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't take being sidestepped and gaslit and spiritually manipulated and abused. I could no longer take that. And then once I was able to step out of that framework and then go, my God, look at what it has done to our country. And those blinders started to fall off of me that I started to see. So I came very late into these movements. And I'm only sharing that for people who say, well, she's overreacting. She's just part of the people who just think that way. They just think everybody's bad. No, I have been in those sermons. I've been taking notes from racist ministers. I've sat in Joyce Meyer Ministries conferences where her husband gets up and talks about the toxic influence of the LGBTQIA+ community in the 90s, in the late 2000s, in the early 2000s. This has been happening for a long time, this buildup to not only engage, but to activate the evangelical community so that when a time for Donald Trump to rise up, they did so in millions of numbers to take him to the highest office in this land. Mm-hmm. And we're still not out of that threat. So yes, I take it very seriously. And there's much that we can learn from that history. It's not time for us to analyze that to the point. We still have to get through this crisis. We still have to get through this next election to see where our country is going to go.
Yeah. And it's very interesting because I think a lot of people, especially like in 2016, there's a lot of people that think like, how could this have happened? How could he have been so popular and won? You know, look at this, look at what he said, look at the things that he's done. And it's like, this isn't by accident. This is very purposeful. and it's very purposeful again in 2024 now with even more, you know, as you mentioned, you know, your Ron DeSantis, your Nikki Haley's, your Mike Pence and things like that. These things are intentional. And I think a lot of it, I know for me, you know, I can speak for me, and I know this is true for a lot of people, is that, like, you kind of had mentioned, like, this wasn't something that was maybe impacting you. I know it wasn't impacting me. And so I was like, it's not impacting me. It's not impacting a lot of the people that I'm around. And so I don't need to be engaged in that. I don't need to be, you know, alarmist about it. And then, you know, in thinking and spending more and more time around people who aren't like me, who aren't, you know, fairly middle class white people in the United States, you know, cisgender, you know, white person. It really opened my eyes to listen to a lot of conversations, and to listen to a lot of real fears that people had. And when Trump was elected, I was working in a birth control clinic, and I remember going to work, and I had a student intern, and we both just started crying and hugging each other the day after, not knowing what would happen.
Yeah.
You know, I live in New York. We're fairly protected here, but that could all change
right
in an instant. You know, we get a Republican governor and all of that goes away.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was a very, very scary, a very scary time. And it actually led to me, going back to school to get my master's in public health and focus on public policy and what can I do on a different level? How can I be involved on a different level? And so, and then same thing as you talked about before, when the pandemic started, I started really getting into TikTok as a way to just connect with people, as a way to just, you know, spend the time, because it just seemed like I was sitting at home all the time. And so, you know, someone encouraged me to use my platform for sex education. And I was like, yeah, I guess if people want to. And it's just kind of been my jam ever since. But, you know, these things are not, like I said, are not by accident. And they do play a big impact. And people in 2016 that were like, you're overreacting. Mm-hmm. Trump doesn't have that much power. He can't do that many things that you think are going to happen. And it's like, he's not even in like office right now. And the effects of decisions he made when he was in office are very much coming to play. And people's lives are being very much impacted. You know, my LGBTQ plus friends in the South, are scared every day for their life.
Absolutely.
That's not a way to live with that constant fear, that constant trauma that's building up. It is not good for anybody's health.
No.
On top of all of the other things, right? Like, we're still very much in a pandemic, despite the government thinking we're not. You know, we're watching multiple worldwide crises and things happening and feeling almost a sense of powerless to it, because there's so much happening in our own country. And it's, I always say, it's all designed to make us feel powerless, to make us feel like there's so much going on that if we can't focus on a bunch of things, then our brain should tell us we should focus on none of the things.
Yeah.
Well, that's the hope, right? Is that they think like we're just not going to rise up. And, you know, as we're starting to see in a lot of issues, they're sadly mistaken on that, because the people, you know, will get loud. The people will take to the streets. I think it's hard to get people organized, but I think with the rise in popularity with social media, especially like around TikTok, young people, especially, and multi-generational. I'm certainly not, I don't consider myself a young person, but I, you know, I am inspired by the level of organizing and activism that I see on social media. It's sad that kids have to be doing this, but it's inspiring at the same time, because it really makes me think, I think we are going to be okay. I think we will. I want to be optimistic about it. I think the youth of our country are all right for the most part. They're pretty cool. They're pretty tuned in, more so than I ever was at you know, 13, 14. I didn't know yeah. anything about politics.
Yeah, for sure. And I would agree with you on that, that there is a reason to be hopeful without being complacent. Like we older generation still have work to do, because even when I look at, I have grandchildren that are Generation Alpha, and mm-hmm. they know what's going on. They very much are more aware and awake to not necessarily the pain in the world, but how we are all interconnected. And I just think that's part of how each generation we do become a more kinder and compassionate. We've constantly been moving towards that. I believe humanity has constantly been moving towards that. And the places in our history where the tension rises is the place where we have a choice. Are we going to shrink back and allow these old systems to continue to dominate, or are we going to move forward? And I think we're in another one of those times. And I echo what you were saying related to the election night. We had an emergency session of my seminary. I was still in seminary, and we were up until like 3 a.m. just sobbing. But then also, I've been very careful about saying this to people, when I think there is, let me think about this. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to say this with mm-hmm. as much kindness in my heart. People need to start listening to former evangelicals. Mm-hmm. People need to understand what's being preached from the pulpit, because the day that Trump had his press conference and suggested that all Muslims be banned, and then did that in his presidency from select countries, I knew he was going to get elected, because I knew the amount of phobia that was sitting in those pews. Mm-hmm. And people around me mocked me and laughed at me and dismissed me and said, he's a joke. No one's going to vote for him. Like, you don't understand. And none of those people were evangelicals. I knew what was in those congregations. I heard them. I sat there. I was the complicit one. I knew what was there. I knew he was going to get elected, because he had touched on the very nerve. Whoever was coaching him knew exactly. That is why he's amplifying the xenophobic comments again now, mm-hmm. because yeah. he has played out. You look at the people who actually support women's rights and their right to have agency over their body. He realizes he's on dangerous territory there, and he's going to lose the woman's vote, but he can still count on the people in our country who are xenophobic. And most of that stems from religious ideology. So that is going to continue to amplify. It's going to continue to get toxic. It's going to continue, if I may be so bold, to be Nazi-like in its mm-hmm. context. And I am not saying anything that isn't true. Go look at what he says and compare it to what's been said during World War II. And you start to see the dehumanization of entire swaths of people in order to ignite hatred that moves forward this toxic ideology to suppress the rights of others and amplify the rights of an authoritarian state. So that is Trump in a nutshell. And so we were right to be afraid in 2016. We were right to cry. And so, you have this threat that's outside of the Republican Party in and of itself. Like I said, the Mike Pences, who's evangelical through and through.
Oh, yeah.
And he still will continue those policies in a way that will try to hold on to some kind of democratic process, but he has no problem whatsoever with annihilating people's rights, none whatsoever. So, you know, I totally hear you, Holly, when you say that we should be hopeful. I'm not to the point where I'm panicking. I'm not. I feel like the majority is with us. The majority is with us. This really is about a collective uprising that says no more. Not only no more, but it's time for a new humanity to evolve and come forth. But that also starts, to bring this back to a more personal level, it also starts with how we are healing ourselves.
Yeah.
And when we do that, when we take responsibility for how we are healing, and when we take accountability and start to look and go within and not so much seek desperately to be belong, but understand that spirituality is within, that in and of itself can be the most empowering thing to make sure that you then are connected to humanity in ways that are not only helpful and healing, but that serve your spirituality. Because again, religion teaches us there's only one way: be connected to your church and we'll tell you how to be spiritual. Whereas this healing moment, if you will, says, no, go within, find out what you need, then find your community. And I think that is one thing. If people take anything from our time here together, that is it. Do the soul work. Do the sacred work of taking accountability for the things that no longer serve your highest good, and continue to work on the things that you need to let go of, that you need to release, that you need to heal from, so that you can show up in your life a better version of yourself. Because these big problems out here can be so big and massive, and you're like, well, how can I help? Oh my God, the world's falling. No, dear one, go in, go within. Then you're going to get direction. Then you're going to see clearly how you can work together for the good of the whole.
Yeah, I think you make such great points. I think anytime you talk about deconstructing, whether it's, you know, kind of deconstructing from religion, and then of course, you know, that's tied to deconstructing from patriarchal views and white supremacist views, right? Anytime I ever get asked in an interview, why are abortion bans happening? Why are attacks on LGBTQ plus people happening? And I'm always like, it's white supremacy and the patriarchy. That's the answer, period. Thank you. Next question.
Exactly.
right? But, you know, I think the hard part for a lot of folks when we talk about deconstructing is that it is really not easy work. It is sometimes very difficult, sometimes very heavy, and it's kind of ongoing. And it requires you to unlearn a lot of things that you learned. I know for me, you know, in talking about kind of my, you know, deconstruction away from like the Catholic church and the Catholic teaching, it was like all of these things that I was taught are not exactly right. And you know, and even in thinking about like images portrayed in the church, like what, you know, a very, very pale skinned white Jesus. And I'm like, Wait a minute. That doesn't look so accurate. But you know, and even a lot of these things. And I think one of the most valuable things my dad always told us growing up was that, you know, when we would go to church, that, you know, he always told us that the Bible is not supposed to be used word for word to a kind of inform decision making, but that the Bible should be really used to take the teachings and the lessons learned and apply them to our own lives. And I always kind of viewed church in that way. Like, and when I would go to mass, I would say like, what is being talked about here? And how can I apply that to my life to be a better person when I leave mass today, for example? And then I started realizing I don't need to sit in the pews to do that. I don't even need a book to help me do that. But how can I work to be just a better human every single day, not only for myself, but for my family? You know, I have a 2.5-year-old daughter, and, you know, for my community, right? And so you know, how can I be a better person every day? And that requires a lot of learning, a lot of listening. In the beginning, I always tell, especially white women, when you read something and it's like white women and it's addressing white women, and your first thought is to go, well, that's not all white women. Don't put all of us together. It's like, no, no, take a step back. If you're feeling offended or hurt or angry, step away, do some reflection, and then come back with a clear mind in like 20, 30 minutes and try again. Because, you know, when articles are like, well, white women, my first reaction now isn't to go, but not all white women. I'm trying to do the best that I can. Why is it not being appreciated? Because it's not about me. I recognize my level of privilege, my proximity to white men, right? Keeps me shielded in a lot of situations that it doesn't for other people. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, it's kind of that unlearning and listening to people who have been marginalized in this country for so long. And then how can we amplify those voices? And so, I mean, I just love the concept that you talk about with spirituality and faith, like institutional religion. And, you know, this idea that we should be finding within ourselves this level of spirituality and then finding the community. And I think we're starting to see a lot of generation, like, you know, a lot of folks do that generationally. It's not even just like, you know, millennials down, but I think it's a little bit of a lot of different generations are starting to say, I need to find me and what kind of works for me. And then from there, find my community instead of going to a building and having them tell me who I am and who I should be.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you're starting to see that for the younger generations as well. So any of us in the older generations, we're coming to that late. But I guess that's okay. You know, sometimes people will say to me, how did you stay for so long? How in the world, especially when I share stories, like, I just don't get it. How could you have allowed men to talk to you? How could you have allowed those stories? It just makes no sense. They can't reconcile that. Well, unless you were raised in the 60s, unless you are a child of the 60s, you're not going to get it. And I understand that as a white woman and a white girl, I was raised completely different than any person who experienced that through the lens of oppression. But when you are raised in a patriarchal system that devalues women, you're going to learn that your voice doesn't matter. You're going to learn to be silent and obedient. You're going to learn that in order to be accepted, that you had to be grateful for a system that actually looked at you as less than. You learn those things very early on. And that in and of itself is very intentional of the system, because the system needs the white woman to carry water for it. Mm-hmm. The system needs the white woman to be its partner, or it will not survive. So that structure is actually more targeted in that way. And I'm not saying that white women are negatively more impacted. I would never say that. But I'm saying that the indoctrinations are more intentional, that it's mm-hmm. very specific and it's very rigid, where you might have a man's experience with a patriarchal indoctrination is going to look much different than a girl's. Mm-hmm. And so I learned very early on. By the time I was 9 years old, I knew I could never be a minister inside the Southern Baptist Church. I knew my role was going to be to be married and to have babies. I understood where my value was. So that in and of itself, and then my proximity to power. So in other words, as long as I am obedient to that, I am then rewarded by that power. And so it's like this constant tension inside your head that you say, am I really going to break free from the very system that is not only oppressing me, but also rewarding me for being obedient? And that's why you see so many people from the boomer generation still very much obedient to the patriarchy. And the work that I did is really hard work, and I will be deconstructing and decolonizing my faith and my privilege for a very long time, because there will always be places where I'm still learning to do that. And that's why one of the most controversial statements I make that get me in a lot of trouble every time I say this is that one of the most dangerous people is the white woman who's protecting patriarchy. But the second most dangerous person is the white woman who thinks she has deconstructed but hasn't.
You're going to have to come back next week for part three. And trust me, you are going to want to come back for part three, because Rev Carla has a really cool announcement and a really cool project that she talks about. So check out next week's episode for all of that. And I'm just really excited. This was such a great conversation, and I'm really excited for you all to hear it and be a part of it. As we wrap up this week's episode, please make sure to follow me on Instagram, Meet Me at the Spot Podcast, and over on TikTok at That Sex Educator to stay up to date with things going on around the world and all things reproductive justice. Don't forget to check out the show notes for more information and how to get in contact with Rev Carla and to follow her on all of her social media platforms, as well as ways to support this show. Until next week, bye! Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Make sure you're following me on Instagram, Meet Me at the Spot Podcast. Do you love the show and want to support the podcast? Well, check out the show notes for all the ways to support the work I do. All links related to today's episode can also be found in the show notes. Help others find this podcast by following me and leaving a review, and also spread the word on social media. See you next week when we meet at the spot.